If you negotiate with your knee before standing up, you're losing that argument. Joint Relief Institute treats joint pain fast. And yes, it's covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000 as in zero pain.
Today is Friday. It's the 8th of April, 2016. This is John Williams. And welcome to another exciting edition of the Mincing Rascals with the whole damn cast here. Hello, kids. How are we all?
Hello, John Williams.
Hi, John. Hello.
That's Kristen McQuarrie from the Chicago Tribune and columnist Eric Zorn. Kristen writes a column, too, and is an editorial writer. And Steve Bertrand from WGN Radio. That's good to hear your voices again. This is the first time in 3 weeks since we've all been in the same place at the same time, sort of.
It's like a reunion.
Let's start by talking this week about Denny Hastert, who is... right now about to be sentenced. Not today, but in any day now, we'll find out how long he's going to go to jail. Is that it, Eric?
Yeah. April 27th is his sentencing date, correct.
And so right now he's just trying to make the case to see how sympathetic he can appear before the judge who's going to sentence him. But in the meantime, there are now four people who have alleged that he sexually assaulted them. Is that right?
The Tribune, a couple of very... hardworking journalists in the Tribune newsroom tracked down what they believe are four victims. There could be more, but this is what four confirmed alleged victims, yes.
This was Jeff Cohen and Christy Gutowski, and they went through all the records, and I think it was just a ton of shoe leather reporting out there in order to find these.
Going through yearbooks, tracking down classmates. And they sort of describe some of them, but they were all connected to the wrestling team, I believe.
And they're all listed as individual A, B, C, and D in the stories. They're not identified by name.
Three of whom are surviving, right? One has passed away.
Right, and he's actually, we know who he is because his sister came forward.
He's a fifth, right? There are four, the A, B, C, and D.
Four
and
new.
And then the fifth one, Reinbold, I think is his name. Is that, am I messing up that name?
No, I think you're correct.
The fifth one.
Steve Reinbold, but I thought he was among the four, but I could be wrong. I'll look it up.
The point is there are multiple cases, and
the judge is going to be faced with that. He's being sentenced for hush money in the case of one of them, but if the prosecutors can show mitigating factors and mitigating cases, the idea is that Hastert likely will face time or more time because of the number.
I was particularly galled by the letter of apology that that Hastert submitted this week, in which he talked really vaguely about things that he had done wrong and his regrets for things that had gone on in the past. And I think he deserves extra time in the slam for not coming clean. I mean, it was one of the weaseliest apologies I've read, and it just filled me with anger about this case all over again.
I guess you straddle the line between, A, doing that because that seems to be the right thing to do, but if in doing so you admit too much, then you only make your case worse, you know?
Well, he doesn't have to get into every little detail, but certainly to acknowledge what the offenses were.
I always thought there might be more than we first knew or suspected, you know? I mean, somebody who does this, I'm not an expert on that, but... You know, I'm not. If you're predatory, I suppose you don't have to be predatory for just one person. If that's some sort of character flaw, then you think that that's going to be there for the next victim and the next victim and the next victim too.
Yeah, and I guess the question is, and I can't remember who raised this. Maybe it was in John Cass's column today. Was he a predator, or was he just someone who was trying to deal with his sexuality, and was someone who, in a way, that's a little less totally creepy. Then
they were minors, right?
Yeah, I don't. I'm not saying it's, but the question is what is the nature of his pathology?
Well, I think that's a really interesting question. I don't think anybody is ever interested in that answer. I think we all kind of came to this roadblock last time we talked about it months ago, right? I thought I was saying something like, I don't think I'm sympathetic to Denny Hastert, but nobody wants to be a Denny Hastert either, any more than you want to be the victim. Everybody's messed up in that scenario. I have some, what's the word? I'll just say compassion for even the Hasterts of the world, because they don't want to be the monster either. Don't you think that? Who wants to be Denny Hastert in that story? Nobody. So I don't think anybody cares about that line of thought. The point is, he's got to go to jail for a really, really long time. That's all we have. That's all we got. That's all we should
but
do.
He's well, but he's not going won't, to yeah. because the prosecutors only charged him with this tax evasion issue because he started trying to hide these withdrawals of money to provide hush money to one of the victims. So I think the most, I mean, his attorneys are asking for 6 months to probation. Probation is 6 months. So, I mean, I think he could get away with no jail time. I doubt if these victims actually testify at sentencing, which one of them, according to the Tribune story, says he's thinking about it, that they would be able to do that. But I don't even think the penalty is that strict.
And remember, the crime committed here is paying hush money. I mean, that's what he's being sentenced for. He's not.
And then he
being
lied
sentenced.
To the FBI too.
Lying, and lying to the
okay,
FBI.
But he's not being sentenced for sexually abusing kids when he was in a position of authority.
Right. And if I'm his lawyer, I argue that there's no relevance to the testimony of this individual D. I think is the one that's going to testify.
What's that got to do with the hush money or the lying? Is that
well,
what you're saying?
It's obviously connected, but it's not. He's not as terms of a victim impact. He's not. He is not a victim of. This hush money. He was, arguably, I think, a beneficiary of the hush money, of the crime, of that particular crime. I mean, I'm thinking like a lawyer here, which is always not a good
well, but
idea.
It's a, so this is a statute of limitations issue then, is that
with
it?
The, with correct. The, with the yes, the sexual conduct.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's amazing, knowing what we do now about how victims often will wait a very long time, sometimes months, sometimes years. You know, maybe sometimes they never come out until something amazing happens, like a Bill Cosby case. But knowing what we do now, maybe we should rethink the statute of limitations on cases like these.
Yeah, it's hard, though, because some of these cases are really old, and it's very hard to defend yourself because, you know, you may not have the memory or the records or anything to say, well, I wasn't there at the time, or I have a different memory of this event because it happened 25 years ago.
It would just be one person's word against another, unless someone actually did have some sort of proof. They held on to some sort of evidence from years prior. But it's disturbing to me that he is probably, you know, he's using this health issue now. He has a blood disorder, and I think he had a stroke as a way to try to gain sympathy when, you know, he has a very dark past. He was two steps away from the president's seat of the United States of America, and he was, in my mind, he is a child predator. He repeatedly sought, from what we know, looked for kids who were troubled, who would keep quiet. And that's what predators do.
And don't you think the system does need to send a message that you can't hush this up with money? You can't buy your way out of the situation. Like this is what he did, although it's just a technical financial crime, that trying to buy your way out of that kind of trouble, trying to cover up that kind of crime in particular, is so repellent that it does require more than probation.
Yeah, maybe that's how you get at that, Eric. I mean, if there's a statute on the real crime here, then let's find a way to extremely punish somebody who's you know, doing that sort of underhanded payment scheme for that kind of a crime. You know, kind of go around the back door and get him that way. At least when I get to be king, that'll be an option.
We're all nodding.
King John.
We're nodding here, John.
Yes.
It's not making for a great radio, but
it's not a good podcast when you just nod. Let's move on to the qualifications of Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. I was a little surprised to see the two of them spending a whole week bickering back and forth, even the former president Bill Clinton got into this. I don't know, Steve, are you disappointed to see them sort of lowering the baseline that they're trying to be above?
I think we saw cranky Bernie, right? We kept hearing about that he had a cranky side. Look, you know I'm a fan of Morning Joe and the MSNBC show, and this came out of an interview of Hillary Clinton on that program. I was listening to it, and Joe Scarborough, the host, said, is Bernie Sanders, after a Daily News interview where he didn't really have a plan for breaking up the banks and things such as that. He said, is Bernie Sanders qualified to be president? And a candidate's not going to say no or yes to that, right, an opponent. And she said, well, look, I think there are questions here. Is he qualified? Well, you know, I would have a question about this. Is he qualified? She never said he was not qualified. She never said he is qualified. She probably could have answered it better the way she did 2 days later, when she said, if it comes down to Cruz, Trump, or Sanders, I'm with Sanders every day. But she never called him unqualified. The Washington Post did a story. Their headline says, Clinton questions Sanders' qualifications.
Mm-hmm.
And he took off on that. And what he did was something that I don't... disappointed me, because I think he's always been very truthful and upfront. And he gave this speech in Philadelphia, and he said Hillary Clinton said, "I am quote unquote unqualified to be president." And she never did. And by saying quote unquote, I mean, he's saying that's exactly what she said.
Putting words in her mouth that she actually didn't. She was.
And so here we
pressed.
Go. Rolling
but it's
down the
so
hill.
Trivial, isn't it? I mean, good Lord, this is. If this is what passes for controversy on the Democrat side, that's pretty weak.
Well, yeah,
that's
I mean, very true. I think he's wounded by the gun issue, you know, and they're putting the Sandy Hook victims on him in a way, because he doesn't want gun makers to be sued in some cases. So I think he was really sensitive to that. So I think this is just sort of the thing that brought out the cranky Bernie.
Well, but isn't this gloss over the real bombshell this week?
Well,
and that's him saying that the banks need to be broken up if he decides they get too big. And he's not clear on exactly how we'll know when they're too big or how we break them up. Yeah. And what is that?
Yes, mean? John, you're right. I think that that his interview with the New York Daily News, I think the interview was done a week ago on Friday, and then it was published on Monday. And it was a faceplant. By Bernie Sanders. They kept asking him, like, how do you do this? And he didn't seem to know. He'd say, like, you want to prosecute some of the people who are involved in malfeasance? What laws do you prosecute them under?
It's almost like he said Mexico will pay for it.
Right. You know? Right.
Oh, that's so good, Steve.
It was his in what respect, Charlie, moment, I thought.
One of his defenders, who later wrote a column, who is a reporter at the Daily News, but not on the editorial board, but was in the room, said that actually was cranky Bernie. And they, you know, this reporter tried to defend him in just saying he wasn't answering the questions in a way that made it where he didn't know the answers. He was just offering one sentence answers, and that was sort of his cranky side coming out. But that the paper kind of made more hay out of it than what was necessary.
And he has put some more flesh on the bones in the days since about what sorts of things he would like to see done.
Yeah, there are some specifics. He's a University of Chicago graduate. He's no dummy. I suppose he knows more about what he speaks than I do, just sitting here reading the paper.
Well, Donald Trump is a Wharton School of Business graduate. I'm not sure that these
and
advanced degrees
because,
make you a...
And the two of them have economic plans that are impossible and could be catastrophic. That's the one thing they have in common, I think. But, you know, from completely different angles. But... please, let's not vote for either of these guys because we think they're going to execute what they're saying economically, because it just can't happen. Heaven help us if it does, right? And then there was Hillary Clinton this week. And I just have to go here, Eric. She wanted to show that she was a person of the people. And so she's in New York and she tries to go through the turnstile in the subway, and five different times she can't get her little pass to work. Bernie thought they were still supposed to use tokens.
Well, that was the thing. She was actually, I think, responding by trying to ride the subway to Sanders' gaffe when they asked him about riding the subway for some damn reason. And he said, "Well, you put your token in the machine, and they haven't used tokens since 2003 in New York."
Yeah.
And then so Hillary said, "Well, I'll go ride the subway," and then she has trouble swiping her card. And I have to say this: I was in California this week in this Bay Area, I rode BART. A lot, which is a great mass transit train system there. And they have little cards that as a tourist I was using, and I had a little trouble with the cards.
There's nothing more intimidating to me than trying to navigate a train system. You know, whether it's I go to Dublin and jump on the RT in Dublin, or, you know, even in Chicago, because I don't do it that much.
Right.
I took my kids to New York a few years ago and I had to get help. Yeah. It's not hard, but it's intimidating.
Don't you think, though, that wouldn't she want to just wring the neck of the campaign worker who didn't have this all figured out?
Right.
And in her defense, a lot of New Yorkers have said they have trouble. You can use it. You can use the system every single day, and sometimes the cards don't work, and you have to swipe them two or three times.
Yeah. So. Well, and of course, neither of these people are strap hangers, right? Let's be honest. I mean, Hillary Clinton said, "Oh, I rode the subway a couple of years ago."
Whatever. She hasn't driven a car since 1996.
and when John and I were emailing about this, he recalled the time when George H.W. Bush the elder, had expressed, you know, wonder at new supermarket scanners.
Right.
He had no idea how that was working.
So there's a fact checker out on that story, though, that actually unravels it a little bit with Bush, that he was, and it wasn't recorded, so this is all just, but the people say that he was actually just making a remark about some new technology with the scanner, not expressing surprise that they existed, and it just sort of has become folklore.
It doesn't matter, does it?
It doesn't.
No, it doesn't. No. Well, particularly, I saw some, and I don't know what
it
I was looking
not.
At.
No.
I saw a video, though, today of him at a grocery store, and they were scanning a carton of milk, and he was running his hand over it like he would feel the beam. And I'm sure he was just trying to, you know, animate that moment and have a discussion, but we didn't hear what was being said, but it sure looked like he had never been to a grocery store.
Well, who are you talking about?
Bush.
Oh, okay.
And then you can, just to make the list complete, isn't the mother of all of these, though, Dukakis riding the tank, those moments where you said, I'll show them, I'll be, you know, strong, or I'll be common, whatever it is you're trying to do, and it completely blows up.
Well, it all
face.
Came in that case. So the George H.W. stuff came up with the subway this week. The tank came up on the Republican side because in Wisconsin, they were trying to get Trump and Cruz to put on a cheese head.
Yeah.
You know, each of them.
Wait,
and
Trump does have a cheese head.
And didn't they get Cruz to milk a cow?
He signed a piece of cheese.
Oh, my goodness.
He signed a piece of cheese. Okay.
He went to a matzo factory yesterday.
Well, can I just pile on? So Dukakis, though, tried to eat some New York-style pizza last week.
No, not Dukakis. Kasich.
Yeah. Thank you very much. And he used a fork. And they.
Oh!
And
oh.
Ineffectively. And that will haunt. If he does not win the election, it'll be for that reason, by golly.
It's like being in Chicago and putting ketchup on a hot dog, right?
Do we have to talk? Yeah, exactly. Do we have to talk at all about the Republicans? It's kind of quiet on the Western Front now until New York and then California.
Well, I'm not quite done, if you don't mind talking about the Democrats, which one thing that's very interesting to me, of course, Bernie Sanders has won, what, 7 out of 8 of the last primary/caucuses?
I think he's won 7 in a row. Yeah.
Oh, something like that. I mean, he's won a ton of them. Even with all that, his best hope right now is to somehow get to the convention without Hillary Clinton getting the, 2,200 delegates, the number the ones that are actually pledged by the returns, not the superdelegates.
Right, okay.
If he can keep her under that number, that's his only hope right now. He's not going to get to that number. He couldn't possibly. And because they're proportional, the ones that are coming up are all proportional, and a lot of them are in states that are pretty good for Hillary Clinton. Even if he does really, really well, he's still going to be behind. And so he's going to try to get all these superdelegates, and one of the problems he's going to have is he's not really a Democrat. And these superdelegates are really party regulars, and Sanders has not been helping other Democratic candidates. He's been raising a lot of money, but he hasn't been giving other candidates money. And they're going to say, wait a minute, this is a Democratic socialist, and he's coming in here and he's saying, yeah, I know I'm behind in the delegate count.
He has no shot. No shot at flipping any of those superdelegates.
I would associate myself with your remarks, except that we've been wrong so many times.
Right. Oh, no, but she's right about this one.
You're right.
Well, because the system is rigged. It's for the party. It's the party's thing.
Well, rigged. One man's rigged is another man's disaster avoidance, right? Don't you think that Paul Ryan and all the others in the Republican Party wish they had superdelegates right now?
Yeah, well,
you know,
what's your point about that?
Well, 600 superdelegates would help the Republican Party establishment protect themselves against the likes of Ted Cruz or Donald Trump.
Yeah, right.
That's why they're there.
Yeah, but I mean, don't you see the frustration with a Sanders supporter, Steve? That it seems
somebody's got to lose.
And it's easy to dismiss him because he's the socialist, so good, the system is working. But what if he wasn't? What if he was more mainstream and even more attractive to centrist America? It would be a shame to see, because Hillary is so entrenched in the Democratic Party, just corral the power that the Clintons have and ramrod this thing through.
Well, if he was more mainstream and more part of the party, I think there would be a divide with the superdelegates, right? Do you guys remember what was it like with Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton? There was not one candidate who had all of those superdelegates pledged. So if he was more viable, I don't think the superdelegate opposition would be as unanimous.
I saw a survey this week that said, what would you guys guess? The percentage of Democrats who say they have a favorable view of socialism. How many Democrats who go, socialism? Yeah, I'm in.
40. I'll say 40%, John.
The 62? Correct answer is 56. Isn't that...
Kristen was just humming. She wasn't going to guess.
Well, she doesn't get to play on that one. But
she gets to play.
56%. 56% of Democrats are not in favor of socialism. They're in favor of Bernie Sanders. I mean, there's a difference there. One's a person and one's an ideology or, you know, kind of a politics. You know, we have a lot of socialistic traits in this country, but I don't think even most Democrats want to go there, right? That's ultimately what plagues Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, to me, socialism is such a huge umbrella term that covers everything from, like, you know, nationalized industries to something like Social Security or even interstate highway system.
Or Venezuela, where you can't, the government controls when the lights are turned on and off. And you
it's
know,
just hilarious to me that one of the epithets that they were throwing at Barack Obama 10 years ago or 8 years ago was that he was a socialist.
Right, oh sure.
You know, this guy's a socialist, and now there's a socialist who's the darling of nearly half the voters.
Yeah, but they throw that at Hillary as though that's her great weakness, right? In this year where she ought to just be able to run the table, she can't get past an old cranky socialist. And I think she can't get past an old cranky professor who appeals to college kids. That's what it is. It's not the socialism that people are flocking to. It's that Bernie is an outlier. Don't you think that's it?
I do. I mean, he's, like we've said all along, he is reflective on the Democratic side of what Trump is on the Republican side. He is portraying himself as an outsider. He doesn't go anywhere without beating up on Wall Street. You know, he has a real simple message, and that resonates with people.
By the way, President Obama was in Chicago this week. He was talking to, was it University of Chicago students? He was at his old law school, right?
Correct.
And he was talking about what we ought to do with the Supreme Court. He said it should not be political. I guess there's no great news there. It was kind of nice to see him in town, kind of back where he used to teach. He also had a quote about we didn't just go
and
in
excuse
there.
Excuse me. I'm a big fan of Obama's. But he's the guy who filibustered against Alito. I mean, say it's not political. It seems naive and disingenuous. It's a very political thing. Anyway, continue.
Well, it's the prerogative of the president, so he's naturally going to appoint somebody that's left-leaning, but I still think that his choice here is a pretty safe one, is a reasonable one. It's not crazy enough for you. That's your problem,
yeah.
Right there.
It's true. I wanted RuPaul. That's who I wanted.
I don't even want to talk about this one anymore. I want to talk about the Chicago Cubs for just a second. Is this the year they have scored 29 runs in their first 27 innings? Obviously, we're only three games into the season as we record this podcast, and Kyle Schwarber's hurt his ankle, but 29 runs in the first 27 innings. Steve, this is going to be the most exciting year in baseball for Chicago since I don't remember when.
You know,
Kristen's waving her hand. Right. She says 2005.
That wasn't that exciting.
I
remember
2005.
No, I mean, wasn't it like a journey when they relied on Journey for their theme music
don't
or something?
Don't stop.
Yeah,
wild.
No, you're singing. See, all of you lefties, that was Bill Clinton's song. You're confusing Fleetwood Mac with White Sox.
Right. Wow. Yeah. Well, but even when the White Sox won it, I mean, I was at the parade. I went to some games that year. That will pale in comparison.
Well, look, okay, we have a long way to go, and you know, we had a near-death collision in the outfield.
Oh my God!
but wow! I mean, I'm watching this game last night, and there's just something about a snowy evening in April, watching the guys call this game, and you know, baseball is back, and every batter that comes to the plate has the ability to do damage, and
there's a swagger team has when they come. Especially
there be a humble swagger? Because I think there's a humble swagger.
Well, Lackey didn't do all that great on Thursday night, did he?
He got the win. Yeah, he settled down. He only gave up six early, and then
If you can score 9 runs a game, you're going to win a lot of baseball games, and their pitching isn't that bad.
And Arrieta came out as filthy as he left. I mean, unbelievable.
It's White Sox opening day. This is really offensive.
I don't know if you realize this, John.
They're
but
3-1. They took 3 from the A's. Very impressive. Even their loss, they played extremely well, and they are close to the Cubs in terms of runs so far.
And the cell is already on fire. The fire department was called there this morning with the fire in the storeroom.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
We have better beer, too. That's the other headline.
I don't mean to be exclusionary here, Kristen, but you do see my point, right? That whatever the White Sox are, and it is what that is, the Cubs are on another scale.
John,
infuriating me right now.
John, here's the thing. All the souvenirs burned in the warehouse, but it's okay. They'll have time to replace them.
Stop.
But to get to John's larger point, if the White Sox, if Kristen is right and the White Sox are also for real, this could be a great
Oh, yeah. Great. I just summer had a great summer for baseball.
It's going to be fabulous.
Now you're doing it.
So now we're not going to mention Trump because I don't think there's much to say about.
Let's take the high road. I mean, you mentioned earlier that Lewandowski is still his campaign manager, but he's brought in this guy to manage the delegate count and courting, and that's kind of where it is right now.
Which he screwed up. I mean, let's be clear about this, that Trump did not really understand the intricacies of the Republican nominating process, and he's having problems right now because some of these delegates that he's getting are not going to be very loyal to him. So, this is something that Ted Cruz has been really good about. So,
well, and they had this moment in Colorado where they were corralling the delegates. And they said they had this real slick produced, I didn't see it, but it sounds like a brochure or some sort of document where they said, here's who the delegates are, here's our campaign theme and all of that stuff, and the ones on the back are the ones that are going to come through for us. And everybody turns it over, and the names aren't there. And they said, what happened? And they go, well, we don't know. There was some kind of screw-up. And then they said, oh, they didn't pay the fee to get on the form, and so it's messed up. The point is, it's just the sort of detail that you need to attend to if you're going to win all of these states and court all of these delegates.
Yes. Can you believe that he's just doing this? I mean, to me, that is just, it's a sign of how ill-prepared he really is.
Well, it's a sign that he hasn't been in politics all these years. I mean, so he's now throwing state by state a ground game together that, not that Ted Cruz has spent a lot of time in Colorado before now, but you get the feeling that Trump is just every week going, oh, yeah, we got to do that. And Cruz and the rest of them know well all along that they should have had this stuff figured out. John Williams with the Mincing Rascals. And on this part of the podcast and broadcast, we asked the gang to recommend something that they're up to. Anybody want to go first? Anything you guys are especially loving right now?
Me.
Steve.
Enough about the White Sox.
Okay, Kristen, I'm glad you got your hand up. What's up?
So I'm almost completed Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, the book that Tribune reporter, ex-reporter Kim Barker. Sorry, her name is escaping me. That is now a major film, and it's all about her reporting in Afghanistan. And it's just, it's entertaining. She talks about mistakes that she made. She talks about her personal life. And you learn a lot about the different tribal divisions between Afghanistan and Iraq and how those wars were actually playing out on the ground. It's an excellent read.
Hmm. I'm going to go back and read Stacey St. Clair and Jody Cohen's reporting on the College of DuPage. I don't know if you saw that, John, and I know Stacey's a great friend.
I had been
friend.
Following it. Did she put something out about that this week?
They won the National Headliner Award today.
Oh, which is announced.
Huge. It's a big
in
award.
Print, yes.
Oh, yeah.
So, Stacey's come on with us several times. Yeah. What a story.
Yeah, great reporter, and so great for the two of them. Oh, I sat down with, this is unusual for me, an Anna Quinlan novel.
Oh.
And it's called Miller's Valley, and I'm going to get a chance to talk to her next week. And you know what? Sometimes you just need a nice story, and I'm 85 pages into it, and I found one.
Great.
Really enjoying it, Miller's Valley.
I'm glad to hear that. I'll go next, and then, Eric, you wrap it up. But I got two books in front of me that I'm enjoying. One is Jeff Passan's book called The Arm. He's a reporter for Yahoo Sports, and he talks about the arm of baseball pitchers and what an interesting commodity that is in the world. And he talks about Tommy John surgery. He talks about the value that we put on those things, the intricacies of how the arm works. It's really a weird, fascinating story, and you don't just have to be a baseball fan to love it. The other book in front of me is called Consequence, and it's by one of the guys who, Eric Fair, I think is his name, and it's a book, he was one of the interrogators at Abu Ghraib, and he had all sorts of problems afterwards doing the, you know, either witnessing or being part of what he now describes as torture. And this is his memoir talking about what that was like and what it was like for one of those guys afterward. And the book is called Consequence. Eric Zorn, what are you looking at?
Well, just this week we decided we would subscribe to something called HBO Now, which is it's an online.
Why are you laughing at Eric?
Well, I thought he was going to end with HBO, and I thought you troglodyte.
No, it's less than a year old.
It's a sex channel. What it is
it allows you, if you don't subscribe to HBO, which we don't, it allows you to stream any of their series, any of their specials, any of their documentaries on any device that you have. at any time. And it's, you know, like it's $15 a month, so we're probably not going to have it for that long. But it's just an amazing. Yeah, you touch the thing, and the episode starts to run. And it's, I mean, that's just so much the way television's going to go. And as soon as they figure out a way to put live sports into an app instead of having to have a dish, as soon as they do, I'm gone.
Twitter this week.
Twitter is doing one game.
Right.
But as soon as it happens that, you know, I'm going to watch the Masters this today on ESPN, and, you know, to not have that would crush me. So,
speaking of crushing, isn't Ernie Els 10 on the first hole at Augusta?
They revised it. It's just a 9 now.
Oh, that's right. That's right. So was it 6 putts then, Eric, or 7?
I think 7.
I watched him, you know, the video that I was able to find didn't show that whole hole. You know, it's early in the round and nobody knew this was going to happen. So they didn't have a camera on every shot. But what you saw was 5 of them within 2 feet. You know, he'd miss it, and then he'd be 2 feet on the other side, hit it again, 2 feet on the other side. Now he's a little pissed off, and he just kind of leans in like, I got this, and he didn't get it. And then you do that one where you just 1 foot, one hand, tap her in, and he missed that. Uh-oh. The sort of thing where if we were all on the golf course, you'd say, hey, pick it up, we're good. You don't get to do that.
The mini putt course.
It's like,
yes, exactly.
I haven't seen that since I took my kids to the mini golf course.
It's so
true. And they're like hockeying the ball around. It was incredible.
Yeah,
it was incredible.
See, we can all play like the pros.
Yeah, I know. If that's any consolation to you, although it's costing him millions and heartache.
Yeah, anybody who hasn't seen that should Google Ernie Els
and pray
and YouTube and just watch
Wince.
Somebody. He's an excellent golfer. He's still an excellent golfer.
And he's won 4 majors. You know, he's not new to the rodeo. Yes. And that is the end of this rodeo. Thank you, Steve Bertrand from WGN Radio. Eric Zorn, columnist for the Chicago Tribune and columnist, editorial writer. Kristen McQuarrie will drop another pot on you next week.
Producer for The Rascals, Kristen Decker, and engineer Bob Ferguson. You can subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or listen to it on the WGN Plus app or WGNplus.com. The Mincing Rascals is distributed by the WGN Plus Podcast Network.
You little rascal, you! You little rascal, you!